We are back for another edition of After the Buzzer from the Man Cave in the headquarters of Gordy Jones. Gordy, how you doing, my
man? Outstanding. And yourself?
I'm well. And our guest tonight is a familiar one and a good one to talk a little March Madness with. He is the outgoing.
Yeah, I know. He's a short-timer.
Columnist for Penn Live and the Harrisburg Patriot News, David. We call him Dave Jones. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Everyone's probably asking, is he ever going to retire already? I mean, how long has this been going on since January? And I wasn't even going to tell anybody, and then it just kind of got out there. Now, all of a sudden, I'm like Chris Berman. You know, I'm never retiring.
You know, I saw Pat Principe up at Penn State on Tuesday. I said, dude, I thought you were retiring. And he said, eventually he will. He was still up there. Yeah, he was up there.
Okay. Well,
now, they have hired somebody to replace him.
Yes, they have.
So he is retiring, but it apparently isn't happening quite as quickly as the original plan. But anyway, we're not here.
Do you know who they hired?
I don't know her name. She is a York Countyan who is now working in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh my God! Yeah. She must be young then.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But she's somewhat experienced, I think, and she's going to travel like he did. She's going to go to all the stuff like he did, which was pretty.
Bethany Miller.
Sounds good.
Yes, that's who it is. Bethany Miller.
Bethany Miller. Yeah. All right, Dave, what do you think of this? What do you think of this tournament? How good a tournament do you think it's been?
It's been a good tournament.
Me too.
A little surprised how good a tournament it's been. I've probably watched 8 or 10 really good games, and that surprised me a little bit because of the transience of everybody.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
These teams are patched together like they're pasted together as coaches can get them, and then even if they get a group together, like half of them leaves, and that's the way it is until they get a collective bargaining agreement and agree on something other than this crazy transfer portal. There's got to be limits on it as long as it can be bargained in a collective bargaining, but it isn't yet, and it's nuts right now.
Yeah. Now, is Connecticut an exception to that?
I'll tell you who isn't accepted to it is North Carolina State. Like, every single one of their guys played somewhere else before.
Yeah.
I mean, they only play 7 guys.
Right.
And they're all, I mean, it's amazing kind of what Kevin Cates has done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he was going to get fired. Mm-hmm. And it's all of a sudden like this team kind of gelled just in time for him not to get fired. Five of these guys, they only play 7 guys. That's all they play.
Yeah.
So it's amazing in the fact that they had to do that 5-game run, five wins in 5 days against ACC competition.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. And then they just keep playing 7 guys in the tournament, and they win 4 more against really good competition. And 5 of these guys didn't play for him last year, and the other 2 didn't play 2 and 3 years ago.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
They're all from someplace else. That is remarkable to me.
Yeah, it is.
My favorite one is DJ Burns, who from Winthrop, and he was somewhere else before that.
Winthrop.
Pardon me?
He was somewhere else before that, I think, too.
I don't think he was. No.
Okay. Yeah.
Just Winthrop. But DJ Horn was someplace else. Mm-hmm. He was at Arizona State, and before that, Southern Illinois or someplace.
Salukis.
And they're from all over the place.
Yeah.
Like Michael O'Connell, the kid that made the big shot for him.
Yep.
He made a couple of big shots. He made a big shot to beat Duke, and if he doesn't make a shot in the ACC tournament.
Mm-hmm.
From like 30 feet banking it in to go to overtime.
Oh, I forgot about
They're not even here.
Yeah.
No, DJ Burns started out at Tennessee and then 3 years. He redshirted a year at Tennessee, then 3 years at Winthrop, and now NC State.
Wow. He didn't play at Tennessee, though.
No, he did not. He redshirted the year he was there.
Yeah. So he didn't really play there. That's what I meant.
Mm. Needed to put on a little weight. so he took the redshirt.
You know, Gordy and I talked about it. This is an interesting game against Edie.
Yes.
Because you've got a couple of guys here who are tremendous college players. Who? What are they? I was talking to Gordy on the phone last week because I needed his help on the NBA, and I don't really think I ever got around to writing it, but I mentioned Oliver Miller and Mark Eaton.
Charles Barkley said Zach Randolph.
Zach Randolph is who he reminds me of. Left-handed guy, big guy, about the same height.
But Zach Randolph is more of a forward, don't you think? More of a face the basket.
He can do that a little bit. Burns can do that a little bit.
I don't think Zach Randolph had that okey-doke stuff that Burns does. I mean, we've all used the term dancing bear for years, decades, but this is the dancingest bear I've ever seen. Incredible. He's so nimble with his feet.
At that size.
They like him at 270. Well, he's got to be three bills.
Got to be.
Oh, yeah, he's not 270. That's ridiculous.
He ain't no 270. And the feet, it just cracks me up when guys are that big, that heavy, and yet they dance around like Fred Astaire. It's amazing. It's really cool. Plus, his hands are so good.
Yeah.
He's got the soft, big catcher's mitt hands, and he has vision, and he just throws these perfect passes. He's like Arvydas Sabonis, isn't he, Gordy? I mean, he's an amazing passer.
Yeah, which is why Duke didn't double him. You know, they didn't want him, like,
feeding. I think that's why everybody doesn't double him.
I wouldn't have doubled him either.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. I don't either.
Except they had Kyle Filipowski, and he's kind of as fleet of foot as Dan Kraft. And that was kind of a mismatch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
The kid from Northwestern couldn't even stay with him and close enough to foul him.
Yeah.
So the question is now, you've got these two guys who we don't even know how much they're going to play in the NBA. I guess they'll both be drafted, maybe, right? Edie will be drafted in the lottery.
Edie will go in the lottery. Burns, I don't know. I don't know what to make him. Somebody will take him to camp for sure, because how can you not, given what you just said?
Well, you're going to have to see what else he can do.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to do
he does. I actually think I'd rather have Burns than Edie.
You could make that argument. You can make that argument.
Talk me out of it, because I don't think Edie gets off the floor at all. Yeah, he's huge. That's why I say Mark Eaton. Yeah. He's just so big that he doesn't have to get off the floor a lot of times, but he doesn't go laterally very well.
No, he doesn't.
He's skilled. He's got good hands.
Yeah.
Very good hands. But he's not very mobile, and he kind of lunges. And I don't think he gets his weight under him a lot of times. I just think NBA bigs are going to give him all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, to say nothing of the whole pick and roll thing where, you know, the little guys will just go right around.
That's a big part of it.
Because that's everything.
Yeah.
That might be
an issue. As good as we talk about the NC State kids' feet, that he might have a problem with that.
Well, especially if he's still at the weediest now.
Yeah.
He'll never get on
that's
the floor.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean, Kyle Filipowski was just then. Who's the kid from Northwestern? I can't think of his name. That from Duke.
I know who you mean.
The backup.
Ryan
Young.
That's it.
I mean, they couldn't even stay with him. He was doing those spinning drop steps. It's like trying to guard a cement mixer. I don't even know what you do. He's so quick. So much quicker than you think he will be, but he didn't get off the floor either.
Yeah,
I think he has to go around. Yeah. He has to get leverage and go around Edie. And if he shows he can do that, then he's going to have an advantage on Edie. It could cost Edie a lot of money if DJ Burns.
Yeah, but Edie is still 7 inches taller, though. I mean, even if you make a spin move, I mean, Edie's still going to reach and block it, won't he?
Gordy, you know what it's like trying to guard a guy
that wide.
It's no fun, especially if they're mobile. If they're mobile and you can't, and he gets an angle on you, it's like trying to reach over the top of a battleship. You can't.
I like it.
You know, because they're wide in the middle, and that makes it harder for you to get leverage to jump.
Right.
It's a real problem. Kyle.
It'll be interesting to see that.
That's one of the things I'm most curious about.
Yeah.
It's down to whether Burns can spin around him like he did those two other guys. And like you say, he's 6'7", 3¼"
I'm reminded when I think about the NBA prospects, a little bit of both of these guys. I'm reminded of that kid, that big kid from Iowa a couple years ago. Remember
I think he's a lot better than Luka Garza.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he is too, but that kid, that guy did nothing in the NBA.
No, he's still in the NBA and he's at the end of the bench.
Yeah, he's the 15th man.
Yeah.
Wasn't he with the Pistons, Luka Garza, for a
while? I think
he's
with Minnesota now, as a member
of
service.
Yeah, he's been on two-way contracts his whole life.
Yeah,
but that's funny because you remember when Iowa played Penn State at the Veleser?
Yeah, I was at that game. That's what,
you were there.
Yeah.
And Mike Missanelli's next to me, you know, former Penn State grad, And every time we're together, we have to argue because that's what we do. And then get others involved in the argument.
But he's
so we're up there, and he says, "Look at this guy, Garza. Where's he? What is he, Armenian? What is this? This kid's never gonna play in the NBA." And I said, "Yeah, well, he'll catch on with somebody. He'll play 3 or 4 years for like a 12th man." And he said, "There's no way he's going to ever play in the NBA." I said, "Yeah, well, he's got skills and he'll find a niche someplace where people bleed because," I said, he'll develop a 3-point shot. And he did, didn't he, right? Isn't it?
He could do that, but I don't know. He just has not had any impact at all, although
I didn't say he was going to have
I know you didn't. I know you didn't, yeah.
I said he was going to latch on someplace and live in the NBA 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah, so, that's what he's done. Yeah, that's what he's done.
I don't know that, see, Zach Edey's so much bigger. He's just a big dude.
Yeah, he's gigantic.
There's only so long you can last as George Murison.
Oh, hello!
But, you know, we know George Murison's name, so he must have done,
I think he's Mark Eaton, I really do.
Yeah, that would be fine.
That's what I think.
That would be fine.
Did Mark Eaton have a decent career? Right?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, absolutely.
He was with those Stockton Malone teams, and he was like the backstop. So, Luka Garza. Averaging 9 minutes a game through 3 seasons. He's played in 81 games. He's a
Pistons and Wolves, is that who he is?
Yep, that is correct. He's averaging 5.6 points and 2.3 rebounds a game and shooting 33% from three. So there you have it.
Okay.
Barely good enough to hang on.
Well, let me ask you about the other big, the big from Connecticut. I think he might have a future. He's
that
a big.
That kid. I mean, that's a whole different thing. Donovan Klingon.
Yep.
Is almost as big as Edey.
Yeah, 7'2". He's 7'2".
He is quite a bit more mobile.
And he's a big athletic kid. I like him.
Yeah, I think he's got all sorts of possibilities because he's got timing, too.
Yeah.
And he blocks shots. He doesn't block shots just because he's big.
Mm-hmm.
He blocks shots because he can jump a little bit, and he's got timing. He has a sense for when shots are going up, and he means everything to that team.
He's very good. He reminds
He's a really, really good player, and he's gotten a lot better this year.
Reminds me of Walker Kessler, who's been a good NBA player.
Wow.
I'm sorry?
Walker Kessler. He's been a good NBA player for Utah. I think he reminds me a little bit of him. A big athletic kid.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Now, what?
Walker Kessler mania.
Nobody talks about Donovan Klingon.
I mean, like him a lot.
These guys have gotten all this pub, but he was a force against Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
He was a force in a couple of their Big East games that they revved up on, and he's a good player.
Yeah, he's got a good feel for it. He's pretty athletic, and he's got a good feel for it. He could be a defense and rebounding guy at the next level.
I think I would rather have Donovan Klingon than Zach Edey.
Same.
I would.
I like that. I'm on... Tell me, have you ever seen a 30-0?
Much more dangerous shot blocker and a lot quicker.
Yeah, I think he has a real future. I do.
Bam.
He just looks like an NBA athlete to me.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look out of place. No. The other two guys, you know, I guess DJ Burns could be a, you know, open up a bank, you know, be the 11th man. He'd be a good guy to have around.
Yeah.
The 11th and 12th men always make appearances, right, for the team.
Yeah.
Does it still happen like that?
Yeah, that's sort of how it happens.
Yeah. Well, I think his coach predicted that he will be mayor of Raleigh someday. Which you got to hope for.
You know, Kevin Keats, he was really going to get fired a month ago.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It's an amazing story, and I just talked to James Johnson. Remember James? He used to coach at Penn State, or did you ever know him at all?
Did not know him.
I don't think so.
James Johnson was, for a little while, a couple of years, the head coach of Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
It did not work out about a decade ago.
Okay.
And before that, he was an assistant under Ed DeCellis at Penn State like 20 years ago.
Mm.
And for 2 years, and we loved him. He was hilarious, a Virginia guy. And funny and has the gift of gab and a really good recruiter and played at, he was a Division III player, Division II player in Virginia.
Okay.
And so he took that and left. You talk about Penn State basketball. In 2005, after 2 years under DeCellis on, you know, their worst teams, when Ed was just beginning there, you know, those were horrible teams, like DeForest Riley and Jan Jagla, guys like
Jan
that.
Jan Jagla.
Wow, remember the Jan Jagla growth chart? That was a giveaway.
Did not expect that to come up today, but I'm kind of happy it did.
Oh, that's nice.
Nick was a little kid. I put it up in the rec room in the basement.
That's hilarious.
Kind of creepy when you went down.
Yeah, a little creepy.
Yeah, you go down there at night and it kind of shocks you.
It's like the life-size Joe that Gordy used to have down here.
I thought of that.
I went down the steps.
You guys got enough. You guys got enough.
Good God.
The Jan Jagla growth chart. That's outstanding.
James was a great guy, and he parlayed that into a job as the lead assistant for Jim Laranjega.
That seems like George Mason. Oh, okay.
Okay.
In 2005-06, which was the team that went to the Final Four out of nowhere.
Beat UConn.
With Penn State, son of a Penn Stater, Gabe Norwood, Brian Norwood, the former DB's coach for the football team. It was his kid and Jordan Norwood's brother.
Mm-hmm.
So he played on that team, and James, out of nowhere, makes a Final Four. At I don't know how old he was, 33 or something back then, 34.
Okay.
And he's been bouncing around. He eventually parlayed that into the Virginia Tech head coaching job.
Mm-hmm.
Did not work out. And then bounced around a little more, and Kevin Keats hired him because they played together at Ferrum College.
How about that? Ferrum College.
So he knows all about this NC State team. And I was just peppering him with questions, but he was on the staff from 2017 to 22, 5 seasons, and his mother took gravely ill. She had her legs amputated because of really serious diabetes.
Yikes.
And he needed to go home and take care of her. So Kevin, I think, was going to give him a sabbatical, but he said, no, I could be gone once. It's not fair to the other guys. Just... Mm-hmm. Let me do this. He saved us some money, and his mom died, and kind of derailed that part of his career. We didn't know where he went, actually, and now he's popped up as Brent Pry's high school recruitment engagement manager or some such. I've never even heard of this, whatever that is, at Virginia Tech. So he's back at Virginia Tech, but for 5 years he was on that staff with Kate and. It's an amazing story because Kate just put this together this year. Like I said, all of these guys were from someplace else, and it's the same kind of thing that when a team gets rolling this time of year, they're much better than than they look on paper. Like, if you go on KenPom, it says that NC State's going to lose that game to Purdue by 11 points. Yeah. Do you believe that? I don't.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they've won their last nine, and that and they're 26-14, which doesn't say which is like that's
an NBA record.
They were 17-14 needed the AQ out of the ACC.
Yeah, they weren't going to make it otherwise. I mean,
had to have it. He was going to get fired.
It's crazy.
And now he's, I'm sure. Did he get a new contract yet or not?
I mean, if they haven't announced it. But
he's in negotiations, I'm sure.
It's got to be.
I just think teams like that, they get it going, and they've got good players. It's not like they don't have good players. I just see something strange happening there. I don't think any of these teams, including Connecticut, are wonderful. I know what Purdue's weaknesses are. I think they can beat Purdue. I don't think DJ Burns will be scared of Zach Edey.
I wouldn't think so.
As long as he can get around him. If he can't get around him, then it's a big problem because his stuff is going to get swatted back, all that stuff.
Yeah.
If he just depends on the fadeaway, that's going to get swatted because Edey is huge.
He's freaking huge.
I think that's an interesting matchup, probably more than Connecticut, Alabama. I guess, is Connecticut in Phoenix yet? Have they made it?
Yeah, I think they made it. There was a lot of issues with the plane, but they made it. And then what was the problem there? Because like the NCAA is issuing statements. Like why? What was it? An NCAA issued plane?
They're in charge of all the travel for the tournament.
So they give them a plane.
Yeah. And okay. If there's some sort of problem with the plane, then you get backed up, and the crew. I've always taught my kid this. I taught Nick about air travel. It's always much better to get a direct flight, pay for the direct flight, don't get connections, and B, early in the day, because if you're dicking around. 8, 10, 12 hours, your flight gets delayed, you might get a connection where the crew cannot work anymore. They have a 12-hour limit, I think it is. And that's what happened to Connecticut. They could have taken a connection into Cincinnati, but they would have been stranded there because the crew was not going to be allowed to go on to Phoenix. They'd already worked too many hours, and that's what happened. So they couldn't find another plane. I mean, I think Bob Kraft should have just given him the Patriots plan.
Yeah, right.
He's got money, but I think he does. Some sort of
he's got some cash. Yeah. Right.
So Connecticut's bidding to become, as we said, the first team since 06-07 Florida to repeat. I mean, is this realistic? Is this a possibility, or how realistic is it?
I mean, they're really good, and you know what I'm waiting for? I know who Cam Spencer is. And I keep waiting. Yeah, he's a Maryland kid who played at Rutgers, and I saw him struggle at Rutgers for the longest time. He was not very good at all early in his tenure there. And I can't remember where he transferred. Just somewhere in the Patriot League, I think.
I will find it. I'm efforting. Yeah. Keep talking.
And he turned into a very good three-point shooter for Rutgers, but not right away. And now he's like this fabulous player, and I keep waiting for the wheels to come off there, because I remember him when he was struggling, and I think he's got a game in there someplace where he doesn't zero in from the three-point line.
He started out at Loyola. He was at Loyola for 3 years, and then he went to Rutgers.
Oh, the Maryland Loyola.
Yep,
that's
correct.
It,
yeah.
Right?
Yep,
right?
That's the one.
Not the Illinois Loyola.
Correct,
right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. So I don't recognize this Cam Spencer. I've been seeing with UConn. I don't know.
He's their second leading scorer. Tristan Newton averages 15. Spencer averages 14.5.
Yeah, Newton's the best player on the team, without question. But Cam Spencer has been a very, very important component because he's their only really dead-eye three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. They're not a particularly dangerous team from three-point range. Mm. They're okay. They're pretty good. But they do a lot of their damage around the basket, and I think they depend inordinately on Cam Spencer to do that damage. He's hit like 100 threes, I think, this series. It just takes a bunch of threes, and he does get to the line some for a guard that shoots a lot of threes. He will fake the three and drive in and get fouled, and he's just an ace free throw shooter. And he's an important cog in that team. Mm-hmm. Now, Tristan Newton is clearly the best player on the team. Donovan Clingan's very valuable.
But, I like him, man.
But Cam Spencer's an important guy. Mm-hmm. And that could be enough for somebody to beat him. If all three of those guys are hitting on all cylinders, they're gonna house everybody.
Interesting.
Yeah, Alabama can really score, but I don't think they're quite as good defensively. All that.
I think Connecticut's going to score 100 on them.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow.
They're not as good defensively.
They don't.
And they play super fast. That's the other thing. They really play fast.
Well, they've been playing better defense than they have. Yeah. Quite a bit better. Yeah. I mean, they play terrific defense in the regionals. Yeah. They play much better defense than they have, but still not... You know, they're playing North Carolina and Clemson. Those are really good offensive teams.
Yeah, that's true.
And they still gave up 80-plus to both of them, I believe. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I can't remember, but I saw those games, though. Yeah.
You know, when they really played, I think they played Grand Canyon, and I really saw them. I saw them going. I saw them beating Carolina outright, even though they weren't favored to win that game, because they just thought they were better than Carolina.
Yeah.
But... Grand Canyon is a very, very athletic team. I don't know if you've seen them.
Well, I saw that game. I saw that.
Mountain Phoenix.
Yeah, Alabama.
That was a high wire act, wasn't it?
That's where
Alabama suddenly played pretty good defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they can't make the errors they do against Connecticut. Connecticut will just... They're going to score 100, I think.
Have you ever seen a 30-0 run like the one that Connecticut had against Illinois? That boggled my mind that a team could do that at this stage of the season against competition.
See,
like that.
You know, Illinois is the Alabama of the Big Ten.
Interesting.
They just want to outscore you. I think it's a bad matchup for Alabama. I just do. I really love what Nate Oates has done, and I think he's maxed out what they have there. Right now, in fact, I think Indiana should have. I don't know. I think Michigan should have hired him. Really,
interesting.
He's the Michigan guy, Nato's.
So you're saying Indiana should have fired Woodson and hired him?
Either one.
Yeah.
Either one, because but especially Michigan. I mean, I just think that was a no-brainer kind of hire, and they got a good coach, but. I think Nate Oates was perfect for Michigan. I'm not sure if the university there. Nate Oates is not, you know, he's kind of got a little Billy Cubs in him. He's fast. I don't think it matters anymore. I mean, you're paying everyone millions anyway. He's a gym rat kind of coach. Mm-hmm. And this tweety, button-down Oxford cloth people at Michigan. They probably didn't. They might. I'm sure they checked out Oates, and they just didn't like his background. You know, he was a really good AAU coach and high school coach in Michigan for like 12, 15 years. Mm-hmm. He would have been a perfect fit there. Mm-hmm. But I respect what he's done a lot at Alabama because he did that out of nothing.
Right.
Mark Godfrey left that thing in horrible shape and had not recovered, and he built that out of essentially nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, if you saw what Connecticut did to Illinois, I think they're going to do the same thing to Alabama.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's kind of a similar matchup. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah. It's unfortunate for Bama because, you know, they could have beaten either of the other two teams on the other side.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's probably true. They probably could have. Yeah.
So to your point about them outscoring people, against Charleston, Alabama's score was 109-96, then 72-61 against Grand Canyon, then 89-87 against North Carolina, which I thought was an exceptional game, and then the 89-82.
Oh, terrific game.
Yeah. 89-82 against Clemson. So yeah, that's where they want to play.
Weren't they leading the country in scoring, I think, for much of the year?
I don't know that.
To it. Yeah. Anyway.
But, well, Oates is very much into the analytics of, you know, he's kind of like a money ball guy.
Yeah, he is. That's right.
Well, he believes in the 3-point shot or layups.
Hates the mid range. Yeah.
Doesn't want to do that, and they shoot a ton of threes. I think they're like top 20 in the nation in percentage of 3-point attempts to all field goal attempts. So that's what he believes in. That's what they do. And if they hit, they hit. But if they don't, you know, if Mark Sears isn't on,
he's a nice player.
Then they're going to have a lot of live ball runouts the other way, and it's just death against Connecticut. You don't want that.
So, Dave, some would say we're burying the lead here by not talking about Caitlin Clark.
Exactly.
And the women's tournament.
Well, I don't feel... You know how I was about women's basketball until recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you do. Yeah,
we've talked about this.
I was a men's basketball snob. And, you know, I go on Sportsnet and say, you know, it's unwatchable. It's just a real...
That's the Girardi cadence there you're adopting.
Yeah, we both would laugh about it because, you know, 20 years ago, it was. There was nothing that I particularly wanted to watch about that game. I think beginning about 8 or 10 years ago, it really started to accelerate. And now, it's absolutely wonderful to watch, and I was one of the people watching the Iowa-Louisiana State game. It's 45-45 at halftime, and you're going, holy crap. Yeah,
that was great.
I was texting people, are you watching this? Are you watching this? And it was wonderful basketball, just beautiful, and then it kind of went in the second half, and I'm not sure what happened to Angel Reese, but I think she sprained her ankle.
I think she did, and she wasn't...
badly.
Yeah.
She wasn't as effective in the
certainly
second
not.
Half.
Certainly not.
And everyone then, said she got 20 boards, but I think it affected her shooting. She
seemed like it.
Yeah, and her mobility. Mm-hmm. So that kind of ruined the game. I thought it was going to be a terrific game right to the end, and Iowa just kind of pulled away. The girl from Chicago, I love her. What's her name? I can't think of her name, but she's the forward who...
For LSU, you mean?
Work inside. I'm sorry?
For LSU or for Iowa?
For Iowa.
Efforting. Keep talking.
blonde hair. I recognize her name if I...
Not Kate Martin. Are you talking?
No. All Ford or something. I can't think of her name.
Oh, yeah. I know who you
starts
mean.
Starts with an A.
I will find it.
And they've got a lot of interesting players, but Caitlin Clark runs that show. I mean, if she's not Steph Curry, which she is...
She kind of is.
She really is, man. Yeah. It's Steph Curry. You know, it's not just the shooting from the logo. No. It's these 50-foot laser.
Yep, and they run hard. They run hard to get there, too. They do a good job with that. It's like on makes or misses. They're running the court, and if you're not...
You better.
If you're not retreating.
She's going to find you.
Yep, yes.
You've got to be paying attention. You've got to have your head on a swivel with
exactly.
her.
Well,
the other thing is, in those transition situations, she has a really good feel for, well, if I slow down a little bit here, they're going to come get me, and boom.
And I really like that about their team. That they understand how she plays, and they play off her just really well.
Other things. I mean, she wants to get guys involved. Mm-hmm. And there was a two-on-one there where a lot of girls would have just taken it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But she passed to her teammate. It was very clear she just wanted to get their team in involved.
Yeah.
And it was early in the game when it was kind of in flux. It was back and forth. And she does little things like that because this girl was not having a very good shooting day. She wanted, needed to see the ball go in the net, mm-hmm. yeah. and it was a layup, and mm-hmm. she fed her. And yeah. and I, you, if you, if you're paying attention, you really notice all this stuff about
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I really so, like the way she plays. I love the yeah, way. I did the whole thing. Just really, how fearless she is, how unselfish she is. It's really kind of fun to watch.
You know, so I know that Connecticut, Kate Butchers, and there's good players on a lot of teams, mm-hmm. and I think it's Beckers, right? How do you say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Paige. I think it's Paige Becker. I think it's pronounced Beckers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way,
see, I didn't bring up the women because I don't feel well versed enough.
To yeah. Well.
Talk about if you can't pronounce people's names, this means you have no business talking about most of them. But Kate Beckers, that's the way you say it, right, Beckers?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I know she's a terrific player and has been, and she got hurt, mm-hmm. which kind of derailed her career.
She's had an injury-plagued career, yeah.
She's a really nice player.
Though. But she's rolling now, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she looks good now, and she was Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, really. Exactly.
Yeah, well, UConn didn't recruit Caitlin Clark because they were getting paid Cougars, or Beckers, whatever.
And there have been other kind of milepost threshold players that advance the game. Belladonna, who I guess is about ready to quit in the WNBA, right?
Yep.
She's about 34.
I think she's out, yeah.
She was one. And this will be the question to me is whether women and men start going to WNBA games.
That is the question.
Could this do it? Because let's be honest here. The WNBA has been a very niche market right now.
Yes.
You could say there were probably as many 45 to 50-year-old lesbian fans as everybody else in the WNBA. I think that's fixing to change. Mm-hmm. And if you know why? Because I see a lot of young boys, mm-hmm. like grade school and junior high and high school boys, watching Caitlin Clark and really, really enjoying it.
Yeah.
Now, does it matter? It doesn't matter sociologically if the WNBA is just a lesbian fan base, but if it can become something much broader, it's great for the economics of the league,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's deserved. It should be more popular than PBA bowling, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which in one time was pretty damn popular.
That's what it has been.
Yeah.
Can it become something else? Mm-hmm. Can it become more than college wrestling? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Niche fan base right now. Mm-hmm. Can it broaden out because of Caitlin Clark?
And what? And because of Caitlin Clark, and maybe going forward, the connection between the college game and the pro game.
I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
I was just going to say because of the connection between the college game and the pro game, which people can see. I mean, people are really interested to see what Clark's going to do at the next level, what Juju is going to do at the next level.
Yeah.
She has to be the span that people walk over to check it out.
That's right.
It has to be more compelling, much more compelling, because while all college fans love being in the college atmosphere and being in their little club.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's different. Yeah.
I think there's no more so any sport than women's basketball, college women's basketball.
Interesting.
That is a certain fan base that loves being involved with their school, mm-hmm. their college.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Connecticut's had that for a long, long time. There's certain other programs that have had it: Tennessee, LSU, and Iowa. And can you transmit that to a pro atmosphere and transform the fan base? That's the question.
You know, it's a moment that could potentially be like when Bird and Magic came out. You know, what they meant to the NBA, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese could mean the same thing to the WNBA. It's potentially that.
Yeah, and we've thought about this in other sports, and it just hasn't happened. It never happened for women's soccer, women's pro soccer.
Which is a shame, actually.
Pardon me?
Which is a shame, given the popularity of the Women's World Cup. You know, that's more...
Drop
the flag in it. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
What'd you say, Mike?
The World Cup is wrapping it in the flag.
But you're wrapping it in the Iowa fans are wrapping that in the Tiger Hawk flag.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yep. Sure. It's that
devoted fan base that you just don't really get in women's professional sports. You've never gotten it. Mm-hmm. Where you do have it with many men's professional sports. When is that leap going to be made? That's my question.
Yeah, that is the interesting question. A couple housekeeping things. Elena Deladon is in fact 34, as you mentioned, and the player from Iowa you were trying to think of is Sydney Affolter.
Yes.
Oh,
okay. She's actually the fourth leading scorer on the team. Hannah Stolke and Kate Martin and Clark are ahead of her. But for whatever,
Stolke's more important as a scorer, but. How do you say her name? Affolter.
Affolter. Sydney Affolter.
Yes, Affolter. She is valuable all over the floor. Mm-hmm. And I'm just learning what these women could do and what they're best at. And it's fun because all of a sudden you've got a new sport that you don't know anything about and it's fresh and it's new and it's fun to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all the little different roles that the different women play. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed that Affolter woman and girl because she's a very valuable player.
Yeah. And I just love the way they all play off Caitlin. It's really kind of cool to watch. Just that you would think that a girl that scores like that much, it would be just her, but it really isn't. It's not. It just revolves around her, but it's not just her.
She's inclusive.
Yeah.
You must have played with guys, just playing pickup, playing with the same group of guys all the time. As long as we play basketball, I can't play anymore. It messed up my knee. My knee finally just gave out right at COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I played I played 50 years of my life. That's why my knee finally just said no more when I was 63. But if you've played that much, and I know you have, Gordy, then you run into guys who are like that. They're not just ball hogs. They're not just great scorers. They're great passers. They have great vision. And there's one thing about guys like that is you don't want, if you're playing against them, you hate playing against them. Mm-hmm. And if you play with them, you don't want to disappoint them.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
They're so good at being inclusive players that if you get a shot, an open shot because of a kick out from a guy like that, you're more likely to make it because you don't want to screw it up. And we had a guy like that I played with for years and years and years at this little gym called Up a Team with a great group of guys. And his name is Larry Davies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a financial guy. I mean, he was a really bright guy who went to Drexel and unassuming guy off the court. But you put him on the court, man, he was just a warrior. He was a tough guy. Mm-hmm. A mid-sized guy who could do a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a well-rounded player like that who includes everyone, who plays the right way, God, it's a joy to be on a team with somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And Caitlin Clark, I'm sure, is like that because they all pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
They all know when she's coming to them. Mm-hmm. And they do two things. They work harder to get open, and they don't want to miss shots when she gets them one.
Yeah.
And they go to the basket, they move without the ball because she's who she is.
Yeah.
She just makes everyone better in so many different ways.
Well, David, let's talk a little bit about the career. The career's not coming to an end, but your tenure as a full-time columnist coming to an end. And if you don't want to talk about this, that's fine, Dave. Just let me know, but... how are you sort of feeling about things? You don't want to talk about it? Seriously? All right. So how's it going? What are you thinking? What are you feeling as you sort of get close to the end here?
It is going to be like Chris Berman, isn't it? you remember when they had this giant send-off for him and you thought he was gone? And now he's
back, baby.
he peaked in 1988.
Like, yeah, you're not going to be like that.
I'm not coming back. And my career is over as people know it.
Right.
So that is true. But I got a couple of things that, like, Jerry Pollan and I want to do a college football analytics site. We have some ideas about. I'm sure you've been on KenPom, right?
Yep.
Are you a subscriber?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
Ken Palm of football is what you're looking for. The Ken Palm of football.
For a Ken Palm of college football.
Right.
I don't think there's a site like it, and we wouldn't completely imitate it because we've got our own ideas. But that's one thing. Also, I've had this idea for 35 years of a color baseball box score that uses symbols instead of numbers.
Wow.
And I want to advance this.
Wow, this is interesting.
And Jerry writes code, so he can make all this stuff happen.
Oh,
so
Jerry Palm writes code.
Yes, he does. Oh. I've needed code. I needed a coder for a long time. And who doesn't, right?
Everyone who doesn't? Yeah, you gotta have a code. I got one in my basement.
He lives down there. Yeah. Every now and then, Michael throw down some food. And
I can't think of whenever I say who doesn't, I think of Martin Short doing his character Timothy with his lives with his mother.
Oh,
he
yeah.
used to yell from upstairs, Timothy, I need to be rolled over, and he says, well, who doesn't?
Somebody dredged up on Twitter the other day that synchronized swimming.
Oh my God, it's the best thing ever.
Oh my God, is that funny?
It's never not funny.
That is a classic.
well, I. Yeah. Exactly. And he's kind of dancing around on the deck. Oh my God, it just kills you.
How much do you think actual synchronized swimmers who are real, really good athletes?
Yes. Oh, they must have abhorred it.
Well, here's what I say to that. Fuck them.
It's still hilarious. Oh my God, it's the funniest thing.
But it's funny. And I mean, the movements in synchronized swimming are kind of goofy. They're like, I don't know what they are.
They're goofy.
Certain conventions and the movements, and that's what they were
thinking about. Isn't there part of that skit where like they're in the studio, they're supposedly in the dance studio with Rob Reiner, and he's like... And
well, no, it's Christopher Guest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and they're pointing at each other, and it's like, I see you, I see you.
That might be the best part of it. When they're in they're in like a ballet studio,
yes.
And they're working with Christopher Guest, and he's going... I see you. Point, and I see you. Oh, man.
Never not funny.
I think all this stuff popped up because Joe Flaherty died.
That's right. That's exactly what it was.
One of the funniest things I ever saw Martin Short do was with Joe Flaherty. On one of Martin Short's specials from eons ago, I was still a TV critic when this thing came out, and like the mid-'80s. And this thing, you know, we used to get these review copies on VHS.
Wow.
And pop them in, and you never knew what you were going to find, and they sent them all the time. And this is like a Martin Short Showtime special from 1985.
Oh, my God.
And it was hit and miss, but the hits were absolutely hilarious.
The hits were big hits.
And he used to do this vaudeville guy named Irving Cohen.
Oh, yeah. Give me a C. A
bouncy C.
And he does Irving Cohen and Nathan Thurm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
it's not me. It's him, right? It's not me.
where somehow Nathan Thurm is like the... He's like Roy Cohn during the McCarthy
show.
Yes. Yeah, right.
That's
right.
Exactly.
In the place of Roy Cohn. Yeah. He's being interrogated by Joe Flaherty as Charlton Heston.
That's
absolutely hilarious.
That's pop culture, right?
That is. That is really.
I wasn't persecuting anyone. Why would you say that?
Why would you say that?
Why would you say that? Since when is it wrong for someone to do their job?
I know that. It's him, right? It's not me.
You seem to be getting defensive, Mr. Durham. I'm not. You should be defensive. You're the one that made Al sit.
And he's working a cigarette with an ash on it. That's like.
And then they get a shot of Jeff Flaherty. He's got his hand behind his neck, going, "Damn you!"
That's hilarious.
Wow.
That's
good stuff.
Weren't you tossing around the idea of a book with Joey Crawford too?
Yes, that's another thing we're gonna do, and we've agreed to do it. So
that'll be great. Joey's great. Joey's the best.
I don't know which one I'll do first, but Joe's got time. He's an active senior.
Senior, but they're active seniors.
He's spry.
The old Kenny Mayne line.
Yep,
they're active. Classic. They're seniors, but they're active seniors.
Yes, that's so good.
Hey, we're all of us are active seniors now, buddy.
That's right. We're here. Wow. But tell me something though. What goes through your mind at this point in your career? You know, what are you proudest of? What do you wish you could do over?
Well, I did gigs. I don't want to get heavy, but there you think about things you did wrong that have nothing. I covered cops and courts mm-hmm. in Columbus for 2 years.
Right.
And when I think about that part of my career, it was very good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a couple stories that I did because I was told to do them where I wish I hadn't done them the way I did them. I'm not going to get into it because it's very involved. Mm-hmm. And
well, but Dave, do you mean your execution of the stories or the idea of doing them?
Just doing them at all.
Okay,
had to do them. There was I'll just tell you, these are regrets I have, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There was a girl, and I did the best I could at that job, but the job kind of happened to me because of something I did wrong when I was a TV radio critic, and I was essentially busted down to cops and courts, which was, as I said, very good for me in my reporting chops and mm-hmm. talking to people. And you
right. Sure. Yeah.
You talk to cops, you talk to firemen, you learn how through working people live, because third shift accident investigative guys. I mean, you see some things and mm-hmm. witness some things that, I mean, it's grim. There's a lot of, what's the line from Absence of Malice? You remember the old...
Yeah, I remember the movie. I don't remember the line.
Paul Newman movie with the Sally Field.
Sally Field is a hell of a movie.
Her
boss has her, and she's depressed because of something she did wrong in the mill, and she said there's also this... You're in this business, and you got to tell about things that happen to people. And there's a lot of bad things happen to people in this mm-hmm. world, and it's something you have to do. But I mean, I wrote a story about. I was told to go up to Westerville, north of Columbus, and mm-hmm. write a story about a student who went to school, I think, at Otterbein, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, who was kind of a sheltered girl and. In a strict upbringing by, I believe, parents that were very strict and religious, as I remember. This is eons ago, so I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
But the point was, she didn't feel like she could reveal the fact that she got pregnant
mm-hmm.
to her parents, and she didn't tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to classes with blousy clothes on so that it won't show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when she gave birth to the baby, she put it in a dumpster.
Oh, dear.
To die. It did not die. Someone heard the baby crying and rescued it. But you can imagine what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
And the world came down on this girl. Mm-hmm. And I was part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a job to do, so I went up and talked to people and talked to kids at the school and even quoted some preacher who's out on the campus saying, Europe's fault. We're all fault. One of those guys. I wrote the hell out. And I wrote the story from the scene without regard for what could be happening to this girl in her spirit. And a year later, we found out that she'd killed herself up in Northern Ohio. And that's the kind of thing that you think, you know, could you have, I don't know. That still bothers me to this day.
How could it not?
I don't think there's, you would know better than me, of course, but I'm not sure anything you could have done would have made you not, made it not eat at you all this time, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I could have gone through the story and did the minimum and not been so, you have to reread what I wrote
I
went at it and I wrote it as not critical, but just wrote it as explicitly as I could.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
About what the scene was.
Yeah.
So she cooperated with you? She talked with you?
No, she was under arrest. Mm-hmm. So I just talked to everyone else. Talked to people who were acquaintances from her class. I found everyone I could.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it on the front page of the Columbus Dispatch. It was on A1.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this. You kind of go along with what news conventions are and were at that time, which is, this is news. It's not our fault that it's news.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to tell this story the best we can.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote another story about a beat cop or a cop in a cruiser. Mm-hmm. On second shift, who was trying to chase down a drunk driver and probably pursued it a little too hard, and the drunk driver was going 80 miles an hour, and it had been on the outskirts of town, and the guy comes into the city, and this cop was, I don't know if he was still in pursuit completely at that point, but who he was pursuing was going toward the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question. Do you keep under pursuit of somebody like that when they're going at 80 miles an hour? Well, this guy went into the south side of Columbus, into the very heart of the city, and T-boned a car full of five people, and they all died.
Oh, dear.
And you wonder if you could have written that differently.
Mm-hmm.
Was the cop really responsible for doing that? No. But you have to, the drunk driver is responsible, but you have to take into account that cop made a decision, and you have to explain and explore all sides of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right, sure.
Which I did. And there are stories like that that nobody really knows about that I think about.
I can imagine you would. On the other extreme, I mean, you have a lot of stories you can justifiably be proud of. The one that, for some reason, I remember, there's the one you wrote about Andy Panko's dad.
That was a great one. Yeah.
I was just talking about it the other day with Brad McAllister. I was talking about it for some other reason. I mentioned that piece. It stuck with me. Just the part about his lawn, his perfectly manicured lawn, and all that stuff.
Gordy, it was spooky. Yeah. I mean, it was creepy. Really.
Yeah.
And Andy Panko was Moonlight Grant.
Yeah.
If you look him up, he played 1 minute for the Atlanta Hawks.
Wow. Let me look. I am looking. Go ahead. Keep talking.
Yeah. He had a 10-day. He had a 10-day.
So I'll know you're listening to everything I'm saying.
And there it is. 1 minute in 2001. Right. There it is. One minute. Yeah. That's hilarious.
I think he had... If I remember, I might have to remember. I think he had 2 10-days. Mm-hmm. One with the Lakers and one with Atlanta.
Yeah.
But I don't think he played for the Lakers.
Yeah, because if you remember, Shaq was like always adopting these end-of-the-bench guys. He did it with Joe Crispin when he was with the Lakers, and he did it with Panko. Yeah, that was his thing. He just kind of adopted these guys who were never going to play. But that's, I guess that's...
You know, guys are good, good guys.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Is Dr. Andy Panko still around?
I do not know. Yeah, but Dr. Panko was quite a character.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
He was the ultimate stage father, and that was the story about how overbearing and controlling he was about everything, and that Andy was going to be a superstar in the NBA. And he wrote letters to people and just smothering.
Yeah.
And Andy was the greatest. You probably knew Andy.
I did.
Well,
and the dad. I know the dad from golf. I know the dad from golf. He was a good golfer. Mm-hmm. He was a really good golfer. Yeah.
I'm sure he was. Yeah. He could probably hit a 2-iron. You know?
but Andy is back in the area now, correct? Andy?
Yes.
He played overseas, but he's back in the area.
He does individual coaching.
He made a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to write that story. I remember.
I haven't thought about that story in a long time, but I remember going down. That's probably 25 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
1999, does that sound right?
Probably. Yeah, well, if he's in the NBA in 001, that's about
right. Yeah, that was about right, because they won the Natty in 94, and he came after that.
Correct.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember them playing at, and Pat was not coaching that team anymore.
No, he was gone.
It was Brad. It was Brad was the coach, too.
Okay. So I remember them playing at, what's the school in Chester? That's where I was.
In Chester.
Widener.
They were playing Widener.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I watched it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That one stuck with me. This is one of the ones you can justify being proud of.
Another one. I'm just thinking about this now. We're talking about this. I remember the one with George Chomp, where he talked about kind of talking Woody Hayes into throwing the ball. I love that
George,
one.
George was a wonderful guy, and at his memorial, all these people showed up. Rex Kern showed up at his memorial.
Wow. He was a figure in the story, yeah.
And he really did save Ohio State football. It's not underestimated at all, and he should have been the head coach. Not Earl Bruce, after Woody was fired.
Right. That's interesting.
If there had been justice, George Chomp would have been the head coach.
Hmm.
And then who knows
what would have happened. Yeah.
Instead, he went on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and worked there on that staff for a little while.
Who was the head coach then?
I'm sorry?
What head coach did he work under in Tampa? Just out of curiosity.
I'll give you a hint. What do you think your team's
that's what I was hoping. I'm in favor of it. Yes, that's it. That'd be that John McKay.
I'm all for it. So you knew. I mean, George did a lot of the stuff that he did at USC.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they basically stole the offense from USC, and Woody even admitted that.
Mm-hmm.
And so did George.
Mm-hmm.
The slot eye there, it was a way to use all this great running backs and offensive linemen that Ohio State had, but also deploy other weaponry.
Mm.
And it's not exactly a innovative offense, but McKay made that into a go-to offense, and Ohio State started using it, and it opened up Ohio State's offense just enough. And Woody was absolutely incensed, because the story, the great part of that story was that George had just become part of the staff, and it's July in Columbus. They haven't even opened up camp yet, and they're in this school room building in Ohio. There's nobody on campus. It's hotter than hell. It's probably 80 degrees inside the place. And Woody has gone into his third hour of diagramming the robust tee fullback dive.
Oh my God!
and there's a lunch break,
mm-hmm.
and George asks Tiger Ellison or somebody, "Does anybody ever ask questions?" It's July of '68, and he says, "Yeah, sure. Go ahead, George. I think you should." He raises his hand and says, "Coach, I wonder if I could come up and and diagram a couple things maybe we could do.
Oh,
and Woody like looks at it like he's a Martian and says, "Oh, okay, come ahead, come up here, George, come ahead." And he goes up, and there's like, if you can imagine, is the entire staff, nine guys in classroom chairs with their notebooks open, and George takes the chalk and starts diagramming the slot eye, and Woody starts asking him little questions, and then just blows up and says, "It's a goddamn slot eye. It's a lighthouse. You're not gonna make my fullback into a lineman."
Oh my God! That's
funny. Get out of here, George. You're fired. You're fired. No. And George, you know, he went back and got his stuff. And George is such a great storyteller.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What was so great about this story is what you got out of him. His memory of this and how vivid it was and how well he described it. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. But certain guys, man, you can't do it if they don't think in pictures. Mm-hmm. And George...
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
And I remember listening to him and thinking, this is going to be great because he's saying stuff. He says, "I got back there and I had to sit down to get all my stuff together, and I'm putting it in my little briefcase that his wife gave him, you know, this brand new briefcase and his legal pad, and he's putting all this stuff. No one's saying anything, and he's thinking, you know, I'm gonna have to go back to Harrisburg now."
John Harrisburg.
I had to press the top. You know, that little desk thing on those chairs? He said, "I had to press it to get up because I was so unstable." I'm thinking, what a great picture.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just so stunned. Yeah. He has to press the little table on the chair to get out of his seat. Mm-hmm. He takes his bag, goes out in this hallway, and walks all the way down the hallway, this footsteps, and finally Woody peeks out of the door and says, "George, get back in here. I haven't fired anyone in my whole career, and I'm not going to start with the likes of you. Get back in here."
That's hilarious. That's
so he comes back, and Woody starts diagramming the same damn play again. And now I wish I could sing. I think it was Hugh Hindman pipes up and says, "Coach, I think George has some good ideas."
Ah, good for him.
And then Earl Bruce says the same thing. And Tiger Ellison says, "Yes, I think so too, Coach." Mm-hmm. And it's like an insurrection.
Mm.
And the punchline is that, you know, the first day of the first game against Oregon, Ohio State came out in a slot eye, and everyone in Ohio State didn't thought it was an illegal formation.
We have not seen the likes of it.
They win the natty. Beating none other than John McKay.
That's right.
With the Trojans with O.G. Simpson.
It reminds me of the time that Penn State came out with three wide receivers, and somebody asked Joe about it after the game. He goes, "I thought that would attract some attention."
Wow.
It might have been right before you started there. Just for some reason, they played in like the kickoff classic, and somebody out. "I thought they would attract some attention."
You know, we used to do that with Richie Lucas.
Everything
went back to Richie Lucas.
Not a single week with no huddle. Back in, even that at Brooklyn Prep. Brooklyn Prep, single week with no huddle. Trying to tell some people.
But
suffice it to say, you're ready for a new chapter in your life. This is,
yes,
this.
I am ready for. I am also tired of hearing myself talk. Tired of reading my own words. Mm. And it's time for somebody younger, much younger, to do this beat of Penn State football.
Well, if you say so. Okay. So now it's down to Mike has to drive by himself now. You know, it's like I'm no longer there. Now you're not going to be there. Mike's going to have to drive by himself.
The lonely vigil.
Yeah. What are you going to do, Mike?
Well, for one thing, I'm going to leave the games earlier.
Hi-oh!
That's my growth, everyone. Yeah. Bring it back. Yeah.
Remember your servers, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. That's right. Tip your damn waitress. All right.
Come on.
Give it up for him. Working on some... Maybe that's what I'll do when I retire. Stand-up comedy.
I think...
I meant without my sparkling repartee.
Oh, I'm all, there's no question that I'm going to miss that. I mean, that's going to be...
That's... How are we going to look at trucks and trucking lines? Slogans, you're not going to be able to do that.
Well, you know, it's funny. I find myself now sometimes driving in the car and I'm talking to my dad, and my dad is not there, of course, because he's long gone. God love him. But I'm still thinking about, I know this is something he would have asked me about, and this is what I would have said. This is a conversation I would have had. So maybe I'll be doing that with you too, Dave. I'll be babbling to myself on the way up to Happy Valley.
Some people can understand what the hell we're talking about. We just started cracking each other up by who thinks that they were passing semis, you know, like an old Dominion line semi.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That was...
And the slogan is, I think it was, helping the world keep promises. What the hell is that?
And that got us on to bullshit marketing.
Oh my God! Which takes us back to your what that video you did back when you were in college, right?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a satire of what we were
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, the world of union labor.
There you go.
What was the other one? Taking food places was one of them.
That's right. That's the one that really set us off. Taking food places.
That's funny. It's like, what kind of marketing is that?
God, I forgot about
that's
that.
That's kind of like a bottom line.
That's what it was.
That's
taking food places.
The other extreme, you're just not really trying.
That's not trying.
You paid somebody for that?
Zen marketing.
It's like, yeah, I guess we'll settle for this as our slogan.
Yeah.
What did they reject if that's their slogan?
Hey, somebody got paid for it.
So it's at some point they had a new hire, like the marketing equivalent of George Chomp, and he says to the boss of this company, "Wait a minute, what is this slogan we have?"
Probably happened.
Come ahead, George. Come ahead, you got some ideas.
Get that.
But I'm just proud to have contributed to our conversations back in the day about the guy with the special parking problem.
Guess what? They're still out there.
It's amazing.
Gordy always used to piss Gordy off when there were people in front of us who didn't really. I think most of them were just pretending they didn't know the rules. And they would always stop and ask the parking cop, you know, can I really? I thought I could go in there. It's like George Costanza. You know, maybe I'm crazy, but is that wrong?
Is that wrong?
And not only ask one parking attendant, but ask the next three as well.
Yeah, we got to have a caucus. A parking caucus.
If Gordy had been driving and not Mike, you would have been leaning on the horn.
I try to stay off the horn. So to speak. All right. David, we love you.
Yeah,
we'll see you soon, man.
Good luck to you. We will see you on the 18th.
I hope you'll see both of you guys, right?
Yes,
you
will see us.
Absolutely.
Yes. We're driving over, so hopefully there'll be nobody with a special parking problem.
Oh, yeah. We can relive the memories. Yeah.
Hope to see you.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Good luck to you. Take care. Be well.
Amen.
David Jones, ladies and gentlemen, the retiring one. So
the retiring one. Look at him there.
This is just a small footnote to what we discussed over the last hour and 13.
Yeah,
but
that's a long one.
We never even mentioned the South Carolina women who are 36-0 going into the fight, which I guess is a statement.
And Dawn Staley, what a colossal figure in the sport.
Yep.
She really is.
Yep.
And this is one of the things... about the women's game right now. It's not just the players. It's the coaches. This Kim Mulkey is like a pro wrestling villain. and she dresses like Randy Macho Man Savage.
And is happy to grab that title. Which I think is another thing that kind of has drawn people to that women's sport.
No question. Big personalities. And all the big personalities and big stories right now in college basketball are on the women's side. There's a lot of reasons for that, but part of it is just extraordinary people. Dawn Staley's one of them. Caitlin Clark's one of them. Kim Mulkey's one of them.
Did you get a chance to read Kent Babb? Kent Babb, who was a guest, by the way, on our podcast at one point. I know him from when he was working on the Iverson book, and he's a hell of a reporter and a great writer. And I thought he wrote the hell out of that piece, as he did.
Yeah, that was very good. There was one thing I took issue with. I did not like the... she left Baylor and left Baylor to wither on the vine.
Which they have not.
Yeah. And I thought that was... I mean, it's just another coach going elsewhere. Right. I didn't like that part. But other than that, I thought it was fine. And people were expecting a hit piece. So when it wasn't a hit piece, they were like, yeah, this isn't that very... Shut up.
He wrote what was the truth there. He wrote what he had. And he didn't have Kim talking to him, but so what?
And I know we're going really long here, but I just want to make one point about that, about the Kim Mulkey thing. Supposedly, he was working on this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. He tried to get her to talk to them for 2 years, and then he contacted her 2 weeks, like when they were almost into the tournament, 2 weeks before the thing was going to run, and she's outraged at this request. So she's carrying on in press conference about what a ridiculous request that was. They're so occupied by the tournament. Well, you know what, Kim? If when they came to you and said, we're going to do this in 2 weeks and you're in the middle of the tournament, you could have said, you know what? I'll sit down with you after the tournament. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then they probably would have agreed to that.
I would think,
and that would have solved the problem. And if they didn't agree to it, then she could have legitimately said they're trying to mess with us.
Yeah, I agree. Right, and here's the other thing: I heard Kent on a podcast recently. I forget which one it was, but he was talking about doing this piece, and he said at one point in the process, I don't know exactly how far along it was, he had a 45-minute off-the-record conversation with Kim.
Oh, okay.
And he thought, and they got along fine. He said. But he thought it was not her that didn't want to do it, but rather the school that didn't want her to cooperate with the Washington Post, that they had a beef more with the Washington Post than with him personally. It wasn't personal against... So I thought that was an interesting sidelight to this whole
thing,
too.
That is interesting. But again, that makes her reaction to it in a couple of press conferences during the tournament basically weirder and less defensible.
Absolutely. Yeah. But at any rate... I'm glad we had the conversation with Dave, and I'm happy for him that he's moving on to other things. It certainly is, a time in life
Here we are. Anyway, that was fun, and now I'm all talked out.
Likewise.
That doesn't happen very often.
I know.
All right, gang, it's been After the Buzzer. We'll do it again next week. We don't know with who, but it'll be good.
It will be good.
We're confident it'll be good. He's Gordy, and I'm Mike. See ya.
See you later.